Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Finance and Facilities Committee meeting for November 23rd, 2015. It is 6 p.m., and we will start with public comment. Do we have Mr. Cooper? Are you? All right. So I'd like to remind members of the audience, or Mr. Cooper, since you're the only one in the audience, that speaker should identify themselves, complete a public participation forum, and limit your comments to three or less. So we'll just go with that since you're the only one here.
Why are you guys ending on that? I hope it wasn't for public
comment. No, no.
Okay, so respect is going to be we kicked back, we did, you guys kicked back the TRS subject to this committee. And so I've got my head tonight, so hopefully I will make the advice as I need to come. But you guys made comments last time about there's better ways to save $200,000 from the contracts than to do this TRS cut. I defy you to find $200,000 somewhere else. I feel that when that was said at the last meeting, that was a poof. That was go away, let's send this back, nobody will pay attention, and we won't ever have to do anything about this. It's about time you guys did represent the people of the district. Let's see, I got some notes here from a nice email that Mr. Escalante sent me about a month ago. Something about being a public servant, and that was a reference to me not understanding what that is. Mr. Escalante, I throw it to you. You talked about a grandfather clause, which is painfully inadequate, but at least it's something. It's kind of like if you need 100 points and you get 1 point. One's better than nothing. So I assume that you'll be for tonight, at least going ahead and furthering with the grandfather clause, and the same with, I believe, what Mr. Gorchinski mentioned that also. Once again, that's painfully inadequate, and we do need to have you guys stand up as a board and represent the people. Okay? And it's not fair to the gentleman who insinuated something close to that at the board meeting about a month ago. This is something I've been bringing up to you guys for 3 years. It's very important for the taxpayers to save $200,000 a year. How it's spent,
1 minute.
How it's spent, I don't know. It's really not all. It's not the ultimate thing, how it's saved or spent. Just that it is saved. And if it goes, and if it accumulates and goes towards hiring teachers, if it accumulates and gets kicked back to the public in the abatement, it doesn't matter. All that matters is that you guys stand up and represent the public for once, anyways. I won't say that you never have, but I'll say that this is bigger than virtually anything else that we've discussed previously. This is a lot of money that can be saved, and there's no reason not to go ahead and do this. And you guys didn't need to go ahead and do all the searching of all the other districts, because it doesn't mean a rip, it really doesn't. You represent the people of 41, not of Kildare or Lake Zurich or wherever. It is really kind of irrelevant. That's my comment. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay. Board Finance Committee review and approval of minutes from November 9th.
I'm good with them.
Good? Okay. Those are approved. Then we move into class size targets. This is just a quick reminder, this is for 16-17. This is for the next school year. You will notice some pieces throughout here, and especially the kinder piece we added to this within the bullet points. And then we added in dual language, just highlighting a few pieces that are they're slightly different, but overall still very similar to years past. Lori, anything else that you would add to that?
It's just the first step in the staffing process. Yep. So once class size targets, once it moves through the process and we get to a point where you're comfortable with an action item on whatever this ends up being, that's when we start then to what we call rolling the students. In other words, taking this year's class, rolling it up to next year, and that begins the process for setting staffing for next year. And that's how we start early, so that we can hit timelines that are statutory for reduction in force and also get out early in terms of any hiring that we need to do.
So with that.
The last time we approved this was 2014, is that correct? That was the last time we had this in front of us?
No, you approve it on an annual basis.
We approve it on an annual basis.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Typically right around this time of year is when we bring the first draft to you, either December or
that was a reference in the meeting we had. It was...
The last report was dated November 24th, 2014.
Oh, so it was.
It was.
Yeah.
But it's an annual, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It felt like.
I got you. I was thinking it was 13, 14 school year.
Mm-hmm.
14 to 13. When's the last time the class changed? Class size changes.
The targets changed. We changed them, I believe it was 2 years ago when we changed the K1, 2, 3. K1 didn't change, but second grade moved in with third grade to level 2. And then this report had some changes on it based on board discussion at the last meeting.
The changes were the two discussed for kinder and then
correct.
The fact that you're looking at A and P and specifically as opposed to across
correct.
The whole board and then the dual language.
Right.
So, what were the changes made before? Just adding 3 to 2?
Previously, it was K2 and then 3, 5. K2, grade 3, 4, 5 as a target. Grade 3, 23, and 25. So, we brought second and third together as level 2 and created the target of 22 to 25.
So, does that mean that grade 2 went bigger when you made that change?
Slightly. And grade 3 could have gone smaller also.
That went smaller.
Mm-hmm. So second was previously, again, 2 years ago, lunch and was kindergarten first grade, so 20 to 22.
Right.
Okay.
3 years
long,
four or five.
We didn't make any changes to 4 or 5.
No, I know, but 3 was long, four or 5.
3 was on its own. It was 23 to 25.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Before that, were there changes, or was that how it stood for a while?
I can look back. I think it has been a while since we have changed them prior to that.
I had a question. The targets for dual language, those are pretty low. Is there a reason for that?
For dual language, actually, what we're really starting closer to, say, 25, 26, and then leaving space for attrition if kids move out of the program, because it's difficult to put a new student into a dual language program midway through. And Paul, I know you had a conversation with Katie about this. I want to make sure my...
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely correct. It's just because of the mobility, the state allows us to have some more flexibility to go up with that target. But we can't exceed that 26, so they recognize that kids move in, kids move out, and ensuring that we have that right 22, so we can add more kids into it as they come in, because it's a federally mandated program. They have to be in a dual language program if they qualify. So we have to set that target at times a little bit lower, because we know more kids will move in throughout the year, especially in with Churchill.
Yeah, it's because it says 22 students maximum. That doesn't look like that's very flexible. But.
Right, and then if you said, to Kurt's point, if you had 26 at the beginning, and this says 22 maximum, should we just put a range in there?
We went back and forth. This was one that we were really struggling with, trying to find the right language on how to approach it. So maybe it is just that maybe a range is a better way of doing it, a 22 to 26.
So there might be a reason not to do it.
Yeah, but I'll bring it back to Katie and ask that question.
But if we're starting at 26, then you wouldn't be in, for their targets, I understand, but you'd have a question. Why are we at 26 in K? That was what she said, 13-13, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have attrition.
Then you have the
22 is what happens.
Yeah, so. Or... if students move in who need that service, they have to receive that service. So what I'll do is go back, especially on the maximum, and see if that's exactly where we want to be, and would it be better to have a 22 to 26, with 26 being the top?
Because currently our averages are higher than 22 in our dual language
class.
I'm
just
going to add
that. 23 and a half.
Is she saying that at 22 is the maximum, and if I go over 22, I need an aid?
No.
Okay. I had been off of that. I had another question. Do we have similar targets for non-Spanish speaking but students are ELL?
For ESL, because they're typically either pulled out or the services are offered tuition, so the numbers, it's like a
number. In other words, if you're Polish, you could be in, let's say, third grade.
Right.
You could be in a class with 26 students or 27 students.
Right. Right.
Do we have similar, how do we help, you know, how do we help those kids, I guess, is what I was thinking about.
Sure, and our ESL kids are counted in those gen ed numbers. Are you talking about more for staffing for services for ESL?
No, it just seems to me in this particular case, that as I read it, we were at maxing at 22 students. But we have students that are non-Spanish speaking.
Correct.
But have the same issues in terms of learning the language and everything else.
Right.
They're in gen ed classes.
Right.
Do we make accommodations maybe in a smaller class for those kids? I mean, I know they're being pulled out for that, but they're in for the rest of it. So,
yeah.
That's, you know.
Let me think about that for a second. Mm-hmm. Typically, when kids first come to us, if they're Spanish speaking, because we have a great number of Spanish speaking kids in our schools, they would have to be serviced in a bilingual program. If a child comes in and, let's say, speaks Vietnamese, and there are, you know, 20 Vietnamese kids at a certain grade level, we serve them through ESL services. And a level one student is a student who's new to the country and requires more services and more time with the ESL teacher than, say, a level three student is who's at a higher language proficiency level. And the access testing is what we do every year to monitor the kids and make sure that they're making progress, and also to make sure they're moving through in terms of reading and writing and speaking. So I don't know if I've answered your question. The kids, and then the placement of students is done at the building level with clustering as appropriate.
So the requirement is the number of students speaking that one language to be able to pull them into a bilingual type of program. We've chosen dual language, so we don't have enough, just using your example, we don't have enough students who are speaking Polish within the school to be able to offer that program. So that's the difference.
Yeah, that's where I was just, I understand that part of it. I'm just wondering, you know, are we making some accommodations for those kids? You know, I realize, you know, I'm picking on Polish.
No.
But, you know, are we making, that child in third grade is having the same struggles as a Spanish-speaking student in third grade, and we're making accommodation through dual language with that. That to me seems that it's an advantage to me that a Polish student, that, let's say one that's Churchill and one's at Lincoln, it just seems they're being pulled out and pulled in, yet we're giving more advantage to these students because we were offering the program, whether it's required by law or not.
Right.
I'm just wondering, what if, you know, are we putting those kids, maybe if there's, you know, four,
right,
two third grades, four third grades, are we putting them in a smaller class size third grade? Is that something that we're looking at? Because to me it's an advantage. I mean,
sure.
To me. So, but.
Because the dual language program and bilingual programs are available.
Yeah, so I don't know. You know, I know we're pulling them out. We're giving them services. I'm not.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But
right.
It just seems to me like we're giving an advantage in this situation to a segment of our population that other kids within our demographic have some of the same issues. So just because they don't have the same numbers,
right?
You know, I'm.
And I don't know how that kind of divides in terms of, like, so I can take a note, in terms of the amount of service or, you know, ESL teacher time that they would get compared to a bilingual or dual language classroom. I don't know the answer to that.
This has come up before, though, what Kurt's saying, and I think part of the response is what you said a minute ago, Lori, because it has been raised, and that is that when the students are assessed and they're identified as a level 1, 2, 3, whatever it is, then the principals and the teacher, the gen ed teacher, and the ESL teachers work together to figure out what does that student need. And it's dependent upon their level of acuity in terms of the language and what they need to get them up to speed to that, you know, by third grade reading level or whatever it is. So.
Well, and I understand. I mean, I would think we do that with all kids. Making sure we're doing that with all kids.
We have so, like you're saying, we have so many in Spanish.
We're given a huge advantage because there's a number of them. But you know, I venture to bet that if we ask the Polish mom or dad, you know, if we could do this, provide this program for you. To me, I would think they'd say, yeah, that would be the best program for them.
Like a dual language.
For me, I just, yeah, I mean, and I realize you can't do it for numbers, but yeah. To me, I just think within our own district, we're giving, I just believe we're giving an unfair advantage. Not intending to do that, mm-hmm. but I just believe that we are. So I guess my question still comes back, and I realize what Eric is saying, but, you know, I know that our teachers, our principals are doing that for every child to make sure, hey, this is what they need. But I don't know, are we, aside from the pull-out, pull-in mm-hmm. scenario, you know.
Like, how much more?
And we've gone away from that in this particular case. And I understand, you know, when we talked with Katie, that some of that was economics, too, that it made sense to do some of these things, you know, because of the way that the number of students were. But,
sure.
Mm-hmm. I guess I just,
sounds like your concern is to make sure that students who are not first language English speakers mm-hmm. are getting through ESL, through the leveling, what they need, mm-hmm. you know, based in their building.
Right.
And did you want consideration given to class size related to that too?
I've just asked them a question that some of you guys have yeah. thought about, you know. So or what are we making accommodation mm-hmm. for them? You know,
yeah, for me the accommodations are being brought to our students through our ESL classes with the federal program and the federal mandate that requires if you have 25 students or more speaking that one language, you have to have that type of bilingual program. But I recognize mm-hmm. what you're saying about it. You know, what are those other supports that are in place beyond just that push and pull out?
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Patrick?
Good. So we'll bring this back around the class size targets in dual language, asking about a range. Would a range make more sense from 22 to 26 as opposed to saying 22 is the maximum, because we know that kids are going to move into it. Is that a fair?
But you're already above that, right?
You could be. Again, we're looking at next year. Yeah, but yeah, currently right now, yeah. So we need to make sure that we have more.
So if those classes stay the same next year, you know if there's no attrition.
No, that's a good catch. So we'll bring that back to we'll just bring it back to full board for discussion. Are you guys okay with that? Okay. Yes. Capital project lockers and cubbies for Ben Franklin and Forest Glen. You want to take this one?
Yeah, at the last meeting, staff provided some information about replacing the metal lockers with cubbies at both schools, and the numbers that were estimated were very high. They're near $90,000 for both schools. I met back with the salesman and the contractor. We actually physically measured everything, walked both schools, got some pricing back. And to do the 357 lockers, there are some additional cubbies that will be added at Ben Franklin because those are 15 inches wide going down to 12 inches wide. So we gained a few spots there. So the total cost of the project for both schools would be $68,995. We originally allocated $30,000 in the budget, so that's the additional $38,995. But in light of this, too, I don't know if I'm sure you saw, at Hadley, we're not going to have to do the total re-roofing of those two areas. So that portion of the project is going to be reduced. We're going to have the roofing contractor come to our next meeting and give a presentation on what we need to have done there. But we should roughly need about $75,000 to do roof repairs. And he believes we can do all of Hadley versus just those two areas. So we'll be able to go over the entire roof, look for weaknesses, flashing issues. And then there's like a 200-square-foot area that would need to be replaced. So we are saving some money from the entire capital project. And then these cubbies would match the existing ones that we're putting in, you know, that we put in at the new addition. It's the same laminates and colors, everything would be identical to that.
Questions for Dave?
So what's the Hadley coming in at, Dave?
We're estimating about $75,000 for repairs.
In the board package,
this is the one with the capital projects on it?
Yep. Is it due now?
Well, this is the one that was last.
Last one, yeah.
Gotcha. It was $575 last time.
Right.
It was in the minutes.
It's $575, and you said it's going down to $75?
$75, correct, yeah.
Yeah, the only comment I had, I was the one that asked about the cubbies, and I was actually just asking to see if we could save some from the lockers, which it didn't seem at the time like there was a whole lot of cost saving there. Then my question is, I'm assuming with you guys looking at the cubbies and walking it, you just made a determination that, I know you said the lockers were old, you just made a determination that you maybe do this, but they're so in disrepair that it...
Right, at Forest Glen, Ben Franklin's are, they may be very much original to the school. The insides, the hinges, Forest Glen, they're sheet metal repairs on, when you really look close at them inside, the bottoms are really rusted. I mean, some of them are, like, rusted completely through at the base, so, they're just in pretty bad shape. So just painting them, I mean, if we did this full cubby replacement, easily 20 to probably 30 years of service on it, because they're just a laminate for micro material. So there's no moving parts, there's no rusting. I mean, kids are just putting frozen contacts in there. So you eliminate all the slamming. I was there actually when the small kids were trying to lift the latch and pull the door open and get them, and they got to like hang their hook up in the high locker. So it would be beneficial for the smaller kids, especially at Forest Glen and the main primary hallway there.
Mm-hmm. I have one question. I was at the Ben Franklin PTA meeting, and I brought this up just in the sense of lockers versus cubbies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure it was, I had a vote there. Not consensus, but the cubbies seemed to make sense to the people that were there. I would say that. The one question that they ask, which the current lockers are shared there. Are they shared at Forest Glen, do you guys know?
I don't think they are. I think they're...
Forest Glen has 253, so I guess most likely, whereas you're increasing to 121.
They can probably still share them, because the Forest or the Ben Franklin cubbies are going to be 15 inches deep, but only 12 inches wide. So
I was thinking about that. I had a parent teachers conference last week, and I looked at the cubbies at Lincoln. And so my question comes, if you know they're going to be shared, which they are, is there an alternative design, maybe, a top and a bottom? I'm not sure the design.
They did talk about that. You can customize them any way you want. So we could take those cubbies and put a shelf halfway through it, and then get a hook on the bottom and then one on the top. And then, but then it cuts down the... Yeah, I mean, if they want to do that, we can look at it. It's just, I don't know if they're... The problem they have with some of the kids' coats are they're too long.
Right.
So if you cut that 60-inch...
I was actually thinking at the bottom, you need to... I don't want to get into the design if you're like, I'm going to use, but if you look at them, they put their shoes on the bottom.
Right.
So
that's what I was just thinking.
You need the second one on the bottom, and you leave everything else the same, because there's two hooks.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a coat and a book bag, but usually the book bags sit on the...
Right.
So you kind of, I have the right, you have the left, I have the top, you have the bottom, your shoes.
In this design, there's that's very similar to the
sixth-grader
cubby that's there.
Or 6 year old.
They got it on. All worked out.
You'll have the right shoe with the right shoe.
Yeah. Everybody's going home with different shoes each night.
Bottom line is, I just looked at it and I thought about this this weekend.
That's
what you need, but I was at the PTA and they just asked the question, well, we're sharing ours, and that's different. And I said, it's a good point. So, just something to think about. I mean, I think the cubbies are better than the lockers.
Yeah, we can work with them if we need to put double hooks in or another shelf.
I don't know that you need more hooks. I think it's just a lower shelf, personally. But at the end, you guys are going to be there. You can see them using them. Maybe you can get them. So, that's just my two cents. But I think cubbies in the long run are better than lockers. Besides the fact that...
Any other thoughts on Cubbies?
No, but what we're saying then is we're going down $500,000 on Hadley and up $38,000 for Cubbies.
Right.
So those numbers are in your projections that
they
we're doing
be.
For February.
Consensus to move it forward. Feels like Cubbies are a good idea from finance to move forward
yep.
as they're presented.
Yep.
Maybe looking at one more shelf
yep.
for lost shoes.
Okay.
Oh, so we don't have lost shoes. Sorry. Patrick?
I just want to make sure that we're making this recommendation independent. We're deciding to spend $38,000 above what we were budgeting for.
Independent of being below budget on something else.
Yes. We talked about that.
Dave did say, you know, long-term maintenance and all the other reasons.
Okay.
You can value it.
I was just saying, let's not rationalize.
No. Quite honestly, Dave and I had this conversation.
Okay.
Channeled Kurt on this one where he said, just because you're saving money in this one hand, don't go out and spend it in this hand. So we talked about that. And it really was about long-term cost savings and the noise factor, the rust that was truly happening at the bottom. So we did channel the board and brought that forward. But thank you for asking. Next one, student fees. We started the conversation. The only thing that we brought back here are student fees, having the technology fee also be added to the overall student fees that you have in your book or in your packet.
As I was reading through the one paragraph here, the basic student fees help offset the cost of classroom consumable materials and all online resources such as World Book, Brain Pop, the library, Reading A to Z. Maybe it's because we're using it one in the classroom or not, but I immediately thought of like STEM scopes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're paying for that. I don't know. I just, for me, these areas to me, you know, are we providing, I just think that fees have gotten to a point where are we providing a public education? And, you know, fees can become one of those monsters where we don't know how to pay for something. So instead of making a cut somewhere, we just say, well, you know what, we'll just, you know, we'll add, and this is probably how the fees have developed over time. You know, we'll add another $15. I don't know what the initial fee was or what it was for, but it was probably for, you know, watching paper costs or something, and then it just, when you don't know what to do, you just add, you know, onto the fees. So, it very well could be. But then it morphs into something else, and now you start getting fee tacked on the fee because we just don't know what to do. And then it becomes a large enough line item in the budget that everybody becomes scared to say, well, how do we take $200,000 out of our budget? Because this monster of fees is gone. And for me, it just, you know, 10 years from now, the board, if we don't do anything about it, is going to have $400,000 in fees. You know? So
the fees, though, haven't been increased. So the monster has to be the same size if you want to name the monster. The thing is,
so they're the same they were
seven 8 years ago.
Yeah,
that's what I believe has been reported to us.
Yes,
it has gone up for 7 or 8. Now I think what we're deciding here, though, is to increase them by $30 if we're adding a tech fee.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well,
so that is getting bigger if we add a tech fee.
Right. Correct.
And is it probably to 2,400 students roughly? How many students are going to have? Next year is the goal.
Next year would be the goal.
Fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth will all have Chromebooks.
Third. I was going to say.
I missed the.
I didn't want to.
I don't want to. My son needs a Chromebook.
that was then led me to my next
okay.
question. So as I looked at what Mike put together with fees, I'm assuming it sounds like those were straight technology fees. They weren't.
Yeah, nothing else included into
okay.
it.
And then I don't know that you guys will know the answer to this, but then I started to wonder. Well, does Hinsdale, as an example, does Hinsdale charge other fees? I mean, they're not charging a technology fee, but do they charge other fees to that?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure whether they do or how in line they are to other school districts. But
We can get that answer for you.
Yeah. We did look at that last year, Lori, or was it the year before? It's one of the 2 years, like I said, 2 years ago, where we did a fee study. So, I think at that time, I know people could have changed them last year.
They needed the technology fee, so they had to do it.
They increased it, I'm sure. But, you know, I think overall, the budget from a revenue standpoint, we're at like 241 relative to a 40-something million dollar revenue spread. So right. we're in a drop of it. It's hard to call it a monster in a sense when it's 220,000 to 46,000.
No,
so the argument could be
then get rid of it.
It's
not a big deal.
I understand the other side of the coin. Yep. It's the beauty of the coins, they have two sides.
Yep.
So, of course, some of your constituents, some of your taxpayers may say, you know, don't lower the fees because that's a
he has to make an existing cut. So that's where you have to find areas where there's $200,000 that aren't important.
But I think the other hand is you can make a cut and then make a cut in the other revenues. Right? If you're a taxpayer, you'd say, hey, if you're gonna make a cut, bring my taxes down by $250,000. That's what they should be arguing.
Yep. I think they are.
No, I know, but if we lowered it, in using your rationale, if we just lowered it to $250,000, you're saying, hey, taxpayers, sit there. You keep paying your taxes. Student parent, you stop paying fees. And that was the rationale you just presented. I'm not saying either one's right or wrong. I'm just saying, just summarize it. So unless you reduce it by $500,000, then you can give each party the equal share. So,
what's the problem we're trying to solve when we talk about fees? Are we getting complaints from parents? Is it just a general overall look at expenses? Because this comes up every year, and we usually have a discussion about it, about fees. And at least the last 2 years, I know we did do a study, found out it was consistent with other places, that if we lowered the fee, theoretically, Joe, it kind of goes back to what you said, if you lower this fee, the idea of having a fee here is so that the non-participating taxpayers, ones that don't have kids in D41, aren't affected by these fees, so it tries to align it that way. But
I guess under that line of thinking, why don't we just have a tuition-based fee?
Because we're a public school, we don't do that.
That's my point. We're a public school, so why are we adding fees onto it? That's my point. When you ask what the problem is,
that's what I was asking. Your problem is in a public school. You don't think we should have any fees at all?
No, we shouldn't have these kind of fees. This will go back to what Patrick was talking about. We should have activity fees. I don't know that we need, and Patrick references last time a little bit, on an activity fee, do you make the activity fee the entire cost? I would argue against that part of it. I would argue as an offset because we want as many kids in activities as possible, but we can use it as an offset. But these kinds of things, to me, and it's an extracurricular, these are things that kids are using as part of their day-to-day life within our district. We're a school district. We should be providing those things. So that's my position.
Okay.
Yeah, that was similar when we were first got on the board that Sam said.
This idea of user fees. Has the finance committee talked at all about another fee area? We lost transportation dollars how many years ago?
About three or four years.
Right? And we didn't have a discussion about charging a transportation fee. Although I know recently in the Herald and in some other publications, that has been brought up, that other school districts do charge for that because it's a service that parents use or don't use, even though their child can use the bus, can take the bus.
Heard you by law have to provide.
No.
You don't, if you're over a mile, put something.
What's the?
Miles.
What is it?
1.5 miles between the attendance center and where you live.
Or if you're crossing a certain...
A hazard.
Yeah, hazard.
But it has to be a state hazard.
Is it a railroad track?
Right.
Yeah.
Typically.
It'd be a good one.
But it has to be approved by IDOT. So okay. I
I'd have to go back and look to see what happens.
Well, that's how we see these things, though. Mm-hmm. The busing that we provide fall into those categories. I think if there's something outside, I definitely want to know about it.
Mm-hmm. We, with the change in the board policy, we have had one family take advantage of busing.
Tuition-based.
Yeah.
So that's what the policy allows. If you're outside those parameters.
That's what we voted on.
Right.
Yep.
A couple of board meetings ago.
Yeah.
So.
But Becky, it's state law, it's Illinois school code that transportation has to be provided for those reasons.
Right.
Either one outside 1.5 plus or hazardous.
Right. Many high school districts don't provide it because they're a public transportation center, but most elementary districts are obligated to.
Yeah.
So 87 doesn't provide to get across, or 87, right? It doesn't provide to get across the railroad tracks. Were your school kids, your daughter's bus, or no?
No, they were close. What's their mileage?
I don't mean to derail the conversation, but I just wanted to bring that up as an observation because it's yeah. I mean, there are just school districts out there that are charging a fee for transportation to offset.
Sometimes it's the incorporation of your district. Some are community consolidated. Some are. It really depends on the type of district you are, and I have to go back and research that.
What is the age you are for the hazardous thing? If you're, 15 years old, crossing the hazardous thing is different than if you're a 7-year-old or a 9-year-old.
Correct. There's different criteria, and it's all set up by IDOT, and I'm not sure. I'd want to go back before I make a statement, back and research what hazards we have approved by IDOT.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense at some level. Mm-hmm.
Patrick, any?
No, I've always stated, and I think it's to what Sam says as well. I mean, we haven't changed these in 8 years, and so to me, it's like we're not adding any consideration to what these fees are established for outside of just a revenue generator, a subsidy. So, my thoughts go back to what I said is we bring these aligned with what the activities actually cost, and we increase them, and everybody pays what the activity, you pay for your activity, or you just get rid of it. Because to me, having a fee just to say we have a fee that brings in $244,000 and we haven't raised it in 7 years, philosophically to me, it doesn't make any sense at all. It's why have it if we're seriously not going to, outside of just saying it brings in an extra $250,000 a year.
So I've heard some conversation around activity fee. Mm-hmm. Is that?
Yeah, I don't know if Patrick and I are on the same.
Okay, could you maybe talk a little bit about where you're at on activity fee?
Let's say somebody's playing volleyball at Hadley. I'm okay with a offset. I don't know. I'm sure we're not paying for the stipend, so probably not close.
Noted.
I'm okay with an offset. It's an extracurricular, but I'm also okay. The reason I'm okay with just an offset is you don't want the fee to not encourage kids. Yeah. You want to have kids involved in it. But I'm okay with some offset to that. It's an extracurricular thing. You're not required. It's not part of the day-to-day.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess that's where I'm at. Then these fees...
The basic fees you would eliminate, activity fees you would you pay for all activity fees? So if I'm a kid and I play basketball, volleyball, and then track in the spring, would I pay all three?
I do believe.
Okay.
Yep.
Without a step down, because you pay all three right now.
I apologize. Without a step down.
Yeah. You pay the same thing. Is that code that
doesn't I'd be okay with that because I don't think our fee is. And we certainly, for people that can't do it, please, that all about that.
So I'm just trying to get to a sense of what do you want me to bring, what do you want
that's
us?
That's where I'm at.
I'm on the activity fees. I've stated this before. I think it's a dangerous scope to pay in play. You can raise them to $100 each, and somewhere there's a threshold where you're going to stop having people do activities at your school, and there's advantages for kids to do it, there's advantages for the school to do it, school spirit, all the rest, kids come and watch their friends, and there's team building skills, there's things that you can loss. I mean, this pay-to-play debate is all back in the late 90s, and the fees just came out. And they, at that point, they were, you know, in the 90s, in high schools, they were $180 to play a sport. I don't know if that stuff counts. And there was major backlash because the activity, the people stopped playing, so on the margin. You know, and those are the kids you really want to play. Well, you want everybody to play. Let me restate that. So, no, I mean, I made a proposal last year that we should just get rid of all the subgroups and just make it one fee at the end of the day. So your accounting's easier, you don't have to do it all. But I'm okay with the way you guys have established it. It's something that has been out there and not changed for, call it, 8 years now. I don't think we're getting emails saying I'm paying fees and I don't want to pay fees. There's certainly probably one or two or maybe six parents out there, but we have 3,600 kids. So I understand there's probably 700 that are free and reduced based on percentages. So really only 2,900 people, which would be, if they all had two parents, would be 5,800 people complaining. If you're getting six people complaining with 5,800 parents, it's a pretty low percentage. So I think status quo works and works for the budget. We are here for budgetary reasons. I understand the philosophical reasons that Sam brought up when I first got on the board. Zach covered, and so is Patrick. But, you know, I just think it's fine where it's at. The question you had for us, of course, was adding a $30 tech fee. That's still open. I think tech fees are, you know, a replacement for the old book fees and the sorts.
And this one's going to buy, this would go towards the insurance fee.
Right.
This would be insurance. The insurance. But
full,
yeah.
Full coverage?
It is full coverage without a deductible.
No, not full coverage, but the $30 covers the full cost of the insurance. Right?
I'm
going to
hand over to Mike.
Yes, it does.
Okay, so the school's not picking up any insurance?
Correct.
We will be picking up insurance for those waivers.
And was that correct? Their parents would not have to pay a deductible on top of the $30 fee, which is important because some of our other school districts around us do charge the fee plus there's a deductible and it goes up if it breaks twice.
You're going from our junior high students having Chromebooks to third graders having Chromebooks. The probability of breakage, I'm guessing, increases significantly. So the insurance makes sense. And, you know,
Mike, what is the situation with elementary children and tablets or Chromebooks? Or
actually, the grade schools are a little bit more careful.
I was going to say, which way do you think it's going?
Yeah. I was guessing that's where it was
going to
be.
Junior high, but those kids who travel through classroom in the classroom with the Chromebooks were at the grade school they got.
Right.
Stay in the same
room. Is our policy for the third, fourth, and fifth graders for them to stay in the classroom the whole time, or are they going to get to take them?
Those are kinds of, will they be able to take them home? At least initially, the first year, probably not. The conversations we'll have at the building level, with the teachers and the principals to see what the comfort level is. But we're just beginning to have the habits.
Right.
So, is our intent to talk about this as a whole board then? Is that
I'm hoping to give a little direction from Finance Committee, but to see if we, I got nothing right now.
I mean, for me, it sounds like we're making the kids have the Chromebook.
Mm-hmm.
So, because of that, you know, I just think we should be absorbing it. But.
Okay.
All right. So I hear a little bit about getting rid of basic fees, possibly. There's two board members who feel like the activities fees could be paid for. One finance committee member who worries about the activities fee, a pay-for-play situation.
Anybody that can't afford an activity fee is not being told.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. It's like anything. Once you start increasing the margin, more people fall in the margin. I mean, you know, that $31 is going to have a different effect. I understand that. Or somewhere, it's at $90.
Where is it?
Somewhere in the same line, you think your best activity, you don't know what you like the best.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a
changed this in 8 years. I mean, there's got to be a thought process to bring it up a little bit, right? If we're trying to offset, let's offset. If we're not, then let's just say we're trying to grab $250 from the parents.
The activity fee brought in $12,000 last year. So I don't think that's
the... No, the entire fee structure.
Oh, you're talking... Because the $250 is just the cap.
Yeah.
The activity fee, which is what I was referring to, is only $12,000. I mean, so...
But those haven't raised in 8 years either, right?
No, that's what I thought you were referring to.
Do we know what all the stipends cost?
Well, even beyond the stipends, you just...
We did last year, so we can get that for you.
But the racks themselves, guys. I mean, every game, you see them on the check register.
Right.
$55 basketball. Now, I understand there's one ref and 10 students on there. But after 10 games, you haven't paid for the refs.
Yeah. You could talk about charging the parents $2 to get in and watch your kids play or something.
So for right now, because we want to get into the TRS conversation, so what I'm going to do is just, I'm going to move it to the full board and let us have a full conversation on it. Does that feel like the right thing to do?
I think it's appropriate.
I think, yeah.
For fees.
For fees.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Next one, TRS administrator compensation. A continuation of the conversation that occurred at the full board meeting, at the last board meeting, trying to find some consensus that evening. It sounded like that there was consensus, absolutely not 100% agreement, that current administrators would continue moving forward with their current compensation basket. That conversations around new administrators in their compensation basket. That's what I heard from consensus. Again, recognizing that's not where each board member landed, but that's what I heard. So that's where I would ask you guys, Finance Committee, to start that conversation around the TRS in relationship to new staff members, new hires. Administrators. I just want to make sure. Joe?
So, you want to start with the new administrators?
I believe that's what I, okay. As I walked away.
That's fine. I just want to make sure we're starting with new administrators.
Yeah, new administrators.
But I don't know if there was consensus to not do anything with current administrators. There was a couple different ideas, but based on the number of us that were here, I think at least three of us were talking about maybe there was something we could do. I don't know that we necessarily agreed upon it. I know Patrick had one idea. Kurt and I had an idea.
Okay.
So I don't know if there was consensus to not do anything with current
Well, we didn't have you don't have consensus, your default is what we're currently doing, right? If you can't make a decision.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, you have to use something.
You've got to keep driving hard on
it. Yeah. So if we can maybe focus on the new, and then time allow, we can go back in and see where, just to try to focus the conversation. And Joe, you want to?
Sure. I mean, last time what we agreed is to bring it back to the Finance Committee to see if we can give direction to the folks that hire for us, Lori and Paul, and for new administrators. And how they should have what should be part of their compensation basket as far as TRS is concerned. There was, Patrick, I think, more or less a testing, piloting, if you will, over 3 years to see how it would end up being if we lowered the TRS compensation. I think Stephanie and Kurt were at zero, right? Started at zero, keep it at zero. For new employees, but Kurt, you also brought up at the same time that if there's a difference between the existing administration and new administrators, that could pose a problem in the, call it the lunchroom, because their compensation baskets were different, even though everybody's kind of has a little different ideas, but that would be a bigger difference. That was that. So, with that, we're pretty much nowhere because
you don't have the one, some don't want the other, and but you want the one. So where do you guys want to take it? Let's just discuss it for new employees.
I guess for me, you know, I've heard the argument that if we eliminate this for our current employees, and, you know, and that it'll, you know, they'll leave in droves because we won't be competitive anymore. So if that's the argument, you know, if that's somebody's argument, then you certainly wouldn't want to say that you want the new employees to be that way, because then you're not going to be able to hire anybody. Because if they're leaving in droves now, you're not going to be able to hire anybody. I just don't find either one of those arguments to be, I just don't believe those to be the case. And so, but I am concerned, as Joe pointed out, if we eliminate it for new hires, then to Patrick's point, we you know, try and take a look at this. I just think you have, you know, I just think you're opening up an awful lot of stuff within your staff, with people, you know, some people getting a $16,000 payment to TRS, and somebody else, you know, equally their counterpart, we're not paying a dime to them. So, so to me, I guess I'm just going to stay on the position of, I don't think we should have it for new hires, and we should be phasing it out for current. So.
The difficulty and the rationale I have is that everybody's compensation is different. They have different jobs. So how would one know that if I wasn't getting TRS and you're getting TRS because you're existing, maybe I'm making more dollars than you? You know, you're making $120,000 and I'm making $130,000, and that $10,000 makes up my TRS. Or perhaps I have other basket of goods that add up to a little more. You know, maybe I have a few more sick days or things like that. And then contracts are public, so people can see that. But to me, if I'm coming in at the finance position and you're coming in at the HR position, they hire two different things. So really, we shouldn't be looking at each other's salaries. What we should be looking at is where our competition is, you know, at other districts for those positions. I do think there are some positions in the administrative staff that are important. They are the four K through five principals. The Hadley principal would be different in my mind, maybe I'm wrong, and then the assistant principal. So there is a of equal, you know, of equal job description, if you would, for lack of a better term. But other than those, I mean, everybody's compensation basket's filled up with different things. And you have years of experience that often differentiates what someone's making. So it's really not that easy to go down to the lunchroom and compare contracts just on one item. Because the other items are different too. So you better get the whole spreadsheet we hand out.
Yeah, I mean, you're arguing the point, but it's a moot point to me, because I just said I don't think we should have them for new hires.
I know.
So you can argue your point, but I've heard people on this board say, well, we're going to be uncompetitive in our administrative team. And when you talk about competition, I've looked at it. I'm not concerned. We are paying people well around here. So I'm absolutely not concerned about that. So when I look at the comparisons, so, I mean, for me, you know, that argument, which is the one that I've heard most often, just doesn't hold up to me. Because if our people are going to leave in droves.
I wasn't discussing that point. That you're going back to a point I wasn't discussing. I was discussing a point that someone
It's a minor point for me, but again, it's a moot point. I mean, you can go at me about
you brought it up. Yep. That's why I was talking about it.
You could.
If it's moot, we don't need to talk about it.
I mean,
that's what
to me is. Yeah, I mean, to me, it's get rid of it for new and phase it out for current. And
I understood that. So I was just bringing up the point you raised. But if it's moot on your end, then let's consider it moot and move on.
Patrick? So you're agreeing with the idea of nothing for new?
Me?
Yeah.
No, I was just making sure I understood.
Okay.
I mean, at the end of the day, here's what I think. At the end of the day, it is important that we give parameters that are flexible enough to hire good people. And it's a different benefit. And you can take benefits away, and then you provide limit. You're going to give more limitations to those who are doing the hiring. That's clear. You're saying, okay, you got to be at 2 vacation days. That's all you can get people. You can only be at 4 sick days. You know, that's all you can do. You can pick any one of the baskets. The minute you start limiting them, it's clear that the people doing the hiring are going to have less of a basket. They're going to have to fill that compensation up in another area. Now, at the end of the day, what you in charge these people with, you charge them with, is to get the best bang for your buck, right? I mean, when you're hiring anybody, you want to pay them a fair wage, you don't want to overpay them, and you want to get the best person possible. So to me, at the end of the day, Patrick, I don't want to limit somebody ultimately on what their compensation basket is, because when you're hiring somebody certainly may say, this is important. Salary is important, yes, but these benefits are more important, that I have, you know, whatever it is. I get a third week vacation. I mean, you've hired people who want more vacation and they'll give up pay for that. They go hand in hand. So I don't want to, I think at the end of the day, as I think about it, I don't want to limit the ability of our hiring staff to hire the best.
So would we consider instead of going zero for new, keeping TRS on the cafeteria chart, but cap it?
I think so. I think
for both new and existing?
I think if you're on existing, you should cap it at the 9.4 and have that where they're at. So
then new, I would assume new too, right?
If you go to Kurt's end, then you want to make them equal. I understand why it's zero is equal. I do understand that. But if you feel a need to make them equal so that there isn't this misunderstanding of one person's compensation passing to another, but then capping it, when we're talking about capping it, the current contracts are written as a cap for a year, and then if it suddenly came up and that it was 10.5, you're not picking up this year, but you're changing the contract to 10.5 next year based on practice.
If it is the sole discretion of the boards. It is the sole discretion of the board. It is 9.4, but then if it changed, it would be the sole discretion of the boards to, if TRS went up to 10, it is the sole discretion of the board. So, in theory, it is capped.
But, no, I'm going back a second.
Okay.
In theory, it's capped. It's a discretion that we don't pick up the additional 26.
Correct.
But the way the contracts would go, pattern and practice, would be the next year, because they're annual contracts, it would go to a 10% cap. Because your new known TRS is 10. So therefore, that's what's filled into that part of the contract.
Lori and I would have to come to you and bring that to you. And you would have to vote on that increase to if you wanted to pay that 10 point whatever.
If it goes up. We have to vote on every contract that comes, right?
Correct.
So we're voting on every contract. So I think I'm not articulating correctly what I'm trying to.
Okay.
We have to vote on if we want to pick it up. If suddenly it was this year that TRS was 10%, correct? Then we'd have to vote on the differential. And that's for 2015-2016 contracts.
In this world, we do 16-17 contracts. We're already for next year.
Okay.
Just so we're... Yeah, sorry.
So when does TRS get figured out? Let's go back.
So even if it got figured out, so look, we're just making it up. If they got figured out next month that TRS is going to 10.5,
right,
which I don't believe it is, then we would, Lori and I would bring you administrative contracts in the spring to say, here are the administrator contracts, and it's our obligation to show you that here's the increase, but it's your sole discretion to increase it or decrease, or increase it or decrease it, I guess.
For
16-17. Lori?
I mean, we can put that language in.
So when TRS comes back and says it's 10.5, is it 10.5 the next month, the next payroll?
That, Becky, if it happens, if they increase TRS, is it an automatic increase? I now understand what you're saying. So if it does go in, does it wait till the following year, or does it impact?
Effective immediately.
Effective immediately.
Yeah, I mean, that
I apologize.
Like June, that was effective July 1.
Yeah, and that conversation happens traditionally annually.
Yes. They set the rates.
We don't have a budget yet.
Yeah. When was the last time TRS went up?
I want to say about 10 years ago.
Yeah, they added the 0.4. Remember those numbers I gave you? Yeah. I mean, it's been stable for 20.
So I apologize, Jill.
I was talking a whole year.
I think it was 7 years ago.
See,
they added
everything
the 0.4.
Else to me,
ERO.
You have to bring the contract to us. So you can just say, you know what, we're not approving these contracts because we don't believe TRS should be 10.5 or it shouldn't be 9.4. I mean, theoretically, the next time we're having this discussion, we need guidance. And that's all we're talking about is guidance. Which at the end of the day, you're going to come back and say, here's the 2016-17 contracts. And we can go one by one and say, yes, no, whatever.
But the guidance would be then, Joe, that again, if TRS goes up to 15%, we've given him guidance, him and Lori, to say, when you talk to the administrators, it's going to be 9.4, whatever is the delta is going to have to be picked up as part of the contract language.
Right. And I think that's proper guidance to give for any board, to give so people can look forward, so they know. So there's certainty, as much certainty as you can give somebody,
but then you're limiting yourself.
And you're limiting Lloyd's ability to hire somebody at that point.
Well, not if TRS is still on the cafeteria card.
No, but if it moved to 15% and you cap it, you're limiting her ability. We have teachers in our surrounding districts that the district is picking their TRS payments up, right? We do not. And I've said before, that's fine. But if this is our argument, wouldn't we, in our last negotiation with the teachers, said to them, we'd like to, because we don't want to limit, we want to get the very best teachers here, that we're going to go ahead and pick up portions of the greatest teachers, their pensions, and their pension payments, we hire them, because we don't want to limit Lori's ability to hire them. We want to go ahead and make sure that we do that, because some of the surrounding districts are paying that. And we don't want to lose the best teachers or lose the best candidates to those surrounding districts. So it just, we're doing it for 16 people. We don't do it for the majority of our people. And then at that point, we're saying, well, because we're limiting that, we must not be attracting the best teachers. I mean, under that line of thinking, we're not attracting the best teachers we can. You know, so.
I think it's best to give you hiring staff and most tweets they can to hire the rest.
But then we should have negotiated that in the last contract. We should have negotiated that in the last contract. You just extended it. If that was your line of thinking, you should have thought about that and said, okay, well, here's a TRS payment.
It's a valid point. But at the end of the day, when you are negotiating a contract, there's a lot of other things in a contract that you'd like. So you have to weigh the balances to feel where you're at. So it's very good.
No, I just want to say, I feel like we've gotten away from the original issue, which is, should we fundamentally be paying the TRS for the administrators or not? And I feel like it's switched into this compensation conversation, which really wasn't where this started from. I mean, in my mind...
You don't think TRS is part of compensation?
Just let me finish.
No, that's the question.
In my mind, it is part of their compensation for... I lost my train of thought. Kurt's point is an excellent one. If we want TRS to be part of our, negotiating for hiring people, then why aren't we also putting it on the table for teachers?
No, I don't think
that we should be paying TRS. So I'm coming from a different standpoint. But in my mind, it's not as if when we're hiring a new administrator, we're going to say, okay, well, TRS is a bucket that we can mess around with. When are we going to pay you 2% of your TRS? Or are we going to pay 9%? Or are we going to pay 15%? I feel like, if you look at all of our administrators, either we pay it or we don't pay it. So in my mind, I don't really feel that it's a negotiating piece, because there's nothing that we negotiate with it. It's either we pay it or we don't. I feel, and I think a point that was made during public comment once, if we need to compensate our administrators differently, and I'm not talking about our existing ones, but when we're hiring ones, if we need to compensate them differently, then find other ways to compensate them. It's more of an answer of, are we going to pay
this?
What is the
TRS that you don't like? What is it, so I understand, what is it about paying TRS you don't like? You compensate them by giving them more vacation, whatever it is, but what is it, the TRS thing? It's the unknown in the future? It's the
I guess the way I look at it,
So it's a fundamental thing.
Fundamentally, we don't pay it for our teachers. And if I look at you know, if you just kind of look, for most people that are working, I think
they pay Social Security.
They pay that on their own. It's a benefit that
the,
not
but the employer pays. But
the employer pays part of the unless you're self-employed, then you pay.
Then you pay both parts. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just feel like it should be looked at as fundamentally, should we be paying it or not paying
it? Yeah, the question is, what is it wrong with paying it if an employer is paying half?
But let me just answer a question.
I'm not asking you a question.
No, but I want to ask you a question because you're making a statement. Technically, the state is making. In theory, the state is making the employee contribution, which is where you get Mike Madigan's argument that our administrators and teachers in District 41 are not state employees, so why, therefore, are we making that payment? Now, you can argue that the state missed some of those payments, but the employer is technically making the other half of the payment. Our administrators are making no contribution right now. They are making zero in terms of anything. So a Social Security wage earner, whether it's at a large corporation to a small company, they're getting part of their Social Security taken out and the employer's matching it. Right now we have the state of Illinois is matching it and we have our own employees not making any contribution at all. That doesn't even happen outside in the world that we live in. Those employees are making partial Social Security payments.
All right. So I hear you. I'm walking through the fundamental. Just I'm trying to understand the fundamentals behind not wanting to pay it. And that's why I was asking Stephanie the question. I wanted you to explain it because I understood his argument. I was just wondering what your argument was. I was letting him articulate it. I didn't want to hear it from you because maybe she had a better way to articulate it that made it easier to understand.
Well, like I said, I feel like we've just gotten away from the fundamental question.
So you guys are leading to more of a Social Security payment thing? Because that's 50-50. But it's only up to $106,000 because that's what the $106,300 or whatever it is for Social Security.
Yeah.
I mean,
Medicare goes on, but
Social Security doesn't. Exactly. It's a philosophical discussion, so I'm willing to have it. Why not 50-50 like Social Security?
But as Kurt just said, it is 50-50. We're not paying 50, state's paying 50.
Well, to your point, though, then, is it, do we want to have an up or down vote on TRS, and then if it's yes, then have a negotiation, or do we think, you don't think it's part of the negotiation, I guess, that should just take off the table for you?
Right, I mean, I guess I just feel like you need to answer that question because I think the original debate was, I don't know that we've ever truly answered that because part of the concern was we don't want there was concern about from some of you about existing administrators and concern if you took it away. But I don't feel like we've ever addressed, well, should we be paying it, you know, maybe they're, you know, Patrick had talked about grandfathering them in. If you grandfather an existing administrator, so okay, moving forward, I just feel like that question's never really been answered. We're talking about compensation and how much should they be paid, and I feel like just a fundamental question, should we pay TRS or not, we've never really answered that. We've kind of danced around it, but we never have answered that question.
So fundamentally, you're saying we shouldn't pay it because other people don't pay. Because the state's picking up the other half already.
What other people do?
That's what I'm wondering.
Because
I know some teachers are, some teachers aren't. Depends what district you're in.
So maybe we need to have a vote on that.
If we have that up or down vote, and if the down vote is no, then it's whatever the vote is, or whatever the consensus is, then do we next talk about how much or how little, or
the philosophical thing is interesting because at the end of the day, it's really money. I mean, philosophically, I mean, what's the?
Let me put it more straightforward.
I mean, to me, I've always
TRS argued, is if we vote as a consensus, that TRS is should still be paid by should still be contributed by the district. I'm not sure where Drew's at, but
would you and Kurt want to then have a conversation about how much, or just kind of leave it, we'll just kind of go with what the existing contracts are? That
you mean you're saying reduce it to a portion?
No, she's saying let's answer the philosophical question first, and then once that philosophically, if we come to a consensus, and let's just say the consensus says, yes, TRS should be paid by the district. Now, that's a very large term. Mm-hmm. Do you guys then want to talk about how much, or do you just want to just say, just leave it as is?
Well,
it's hypothetical. I shouldn't even ask.
Yeah, well, no, but I mean, you're asking for. I mean, you're asking for some compromise coming off the position? Is that what you're?
No, because I wanted. Stephanie is saying we haven't even answered a philosophical question. It's like, okay, we can have it, mm-hmm. and we can take the. I guess it probably has to be at the full board, and then it's going to get bounced back to finance to say.
Why is it a philosophical discussion question? I don't buy the philosophical.
Well, some people just don't feel that we should be paying. So,
but I mean, it's like maybe we shouldn't be paying for their cell phones. I mean, people may have a philosophical question about their cell phones.
You believe that philosophically we should?
No, it's not a philosophical question.
But in the end, I've stated it. The state is making the contribution employer.
We restate it when they're out there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't know why we're talking about it anymore. That's the position that's been taken. It would be like saying, you know what, we're just gonna go ahead and have the employers now pay all of Social Security. As an employee, you're not gonna have to make any contribution to your Social Security. Some people do that
because they get compensated more to make up for what their Social Security payment, certainly. Some employers do a lot of different things.
Well, maybe that's so I don't see how it's philosophical
because at the end of the day, it's dollars.
I don't look at it as dollars, but it comes back down to whether you believe or I believe
we'll still be competitive. I don't believe that we're going to have to rework these things. We're going to have to pay some extra $16,000 to attract good candidates.
Here's the equation for it. Just cut their salaries by 10%. Doesn't that achieve the same thing for you? Actually, we do a little more, by 0.6%. Because if your goal is just to
the salary, to your point, is always going to be negotiated, right? I mean, according to you, with the 16 measure, this just eliminates, to me, what is a perk. It just eliminates it. Salary's not a perk.
The philosophical discussion we're having here is how you compensate people. That's the philosophical discussion. One item is compensation. If you have an issue with TRS for some reason because it's unfunded or whatever, that could be the reason you don't want to dip into that. And Erica wants to speak, so we should probably let her speak since she has that. But at the end of the day, it's all compensation. A perk is compensation.
You're the one that brought it up. So you're saying that you'd like to cut the administrator's salary by 10%.
No, I said, wouldn't you be equal?
No, I've stated what I think should happen. Don't tell me what I'm saying. I don't believe that we should cut their compensation by 10%. I believe that we should take their TRS payments and phase them out over 3 to 5 years. I don't know how I can say that
Isn't that the equivalent? Then it's gone forever.
It's never there again.
No, your compensation. You misunderstood my question.
Okay.
So I'll try to reword it. You said take it off over 3 years. Aren't you then just taking a pay cut over those 3 years if you're an administrator? Instead of doing it today and cut it 10%, you're saying cut it at 3 1/3, 3 1/3, 3 1/3.
Right.
Okay, so you want to cut their overall complex.
Their compensation will be cut, but their salary's not.
Yeah, but you're exactly right. But when someone accepts a job, they accept it based on the whole plan, not on the salary.
When you get your annual report...
Your arguments don't hold true because I said this last time, and Dean, you weren't here, so you wouldn't have known this. But we have more than 16 employees here, and you guys changed, and the board, as future boards go forth, will constantly change the compensation package of the teachers.
Yes.
But you act as if we should never change the compensation package of the administrators.
No.
And I just don't understand that.
No,
I just don't
understand.
Because we're looking at them on a one-year contract. So each year, their compensation package can be adjusted.
Absolutely.
And it happens out there in the world we live in. People's compensation packages, executives' compensation packages are changed, especially if there's a revenue issue within a corporation. So, you know, those kinds of things happen all the time. We act here as if no executive in America has ever had his compensation package reduced. We're lowering the amount of 401k contribution we're making. Those things happen all the time. Why can't they happen here? That just doesn't hold an argument.
I think we agree they can. It just,
well, and if you don't want to, that's fine. Then that's the position you take.
Well, I mean, you know, Stephanie asked a question, and I don't think this is, for me, not a philosophical conversation. It wasn't from the very beginning. It got brought up in public conversation, and I think I feel like we're mixing apples and oranges here, because we're talking about very different positions and expectations around roles. And I don't hear that piece of the conversation being discussed, and I think that that's absolutely crucial. And to me, you know, this is a board, even more so now, and in good ways, that focuses very, very much on evaluation and assessment, and looking at benchmarking. You know, how are we doing here? How are we doing versus, you know, an academic? And so, you know, we chose the X number of districts that and gave them to Lori individually, and then she pulled together the ones that we had agreed to and added actually a couple more. And so for a board that focuses so much on data, to look at that and not and to say that doesn't matter, I think is it doesn't fit for me, because there's the only trend that we see in terms of the data has been presented for administrators, not for AFSCME staff, not for teachers, is the data that was presented to us. And that the what we found is that this is a normal, natural part mm-hmm. of a whole compensation. At the end of the year, when I get my benefit package, my annual report, there's a pie chart, and it shows all those pieces together. And that's what is my compensation. And so that's the whole, not just the parts. And so I would suggest that if we're, and I said this before, and this will be my final comment, if we're looking to reduce taxpayer distress, then for this coming year, $200, if you simply divide it out over the number of parcels that, you know, we tax, right? $200,000, it's like, I think it's $18 potentially that would go to a household. I think, personally, the board can do better than that if we're looking to reduce the budget. We have, this board over time has number one, during the recession, stayed in the black. Number two, abated money. We see that on our levy chart tonight, so we're talking about that. We have been able to make reductions in the budget, and we have really smart administrators, which is why I want to keep them, that can do that work for us. If it's our consensus to say to Paul, you know, the real conversation is, let's reduce the budget and see where we can make some real difference, then that's the conversation to me. But for a board that looks so much at data, to dismiss that and not take that into account, I think is it's.
Can I respond to that quick? That I find that interesting, because we do look at data, and mm-hmm. we also, and I said last time, we went on gut instinct with our kids with think tank. We didn't do a whole lot of search on it. But my point is, with the last teacher contract, and Erica, you've said it several times, we were trailblazers, where we tied their payment into the CPI. No other mm-hmm. districts were doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I never heard you say, are we afraid we're going to lose teachers because other districts aren't doing this, and we're actually protecting
the district, right? That's been your position. We're protecting the district. Mm-hmm. And we were trailblazers, tying the payments into CPI. But never once did I
hear
you.
Which other districts are now doing?
Which exactly. Mm-hmm. And don't you think if we were trailblazers here, maybe other districts might do that? Don't you think that that might actually...
I personally am not willing to take that risk.
Your argument, again, sorry, does not hold any
well,
any water with BB.
Well,
it's my opinion, but we continue to look as if we have 16 employees here, but yet we treat the other employees differently because we've been trailblazers with them in a sense where no other districts... We're no other... Joel, let me finish.
I know, but we're almost through, so go ahead. We've
got 10 minutes, all right. Or are you going to finish? Is there something else
Go ahead.
I appreciate what you're saying.
I'll do the same to you later with the filibustering and stuff. So.
I don't spend the filibuster.
No, you don't.
You did a good job making your point.
Can we just, just need to take it to the full board and vote?
Well,
I mean, when this
here's what I'm thinking. Because we were at the whole board before, and we had the same discussion. And I think we're ending up in the same place, which, kudos to us for, ending up in the same place, I guess.
Well, we haven't reduced the budget. We have people, I can't say this any other way. I mean, Eric has been on this board for how long? We've never had a reduced budget. I made that point last time. We evaded one time. We created a lot of confusion to the taxpayer. But, no offense, Eric, you've been on this board for how long? Yet each year we have gained more revenue since you've been on the board. Each year the revenue's
increased. Kurt, if you're going to blame me for that, then...
You're talking about reducing budgets, but I'm a little leery of someone saying let's reduce the budget in other ways when I've not seen that person
when
reduce the budget.
That's incorrect, because when we talk about the levy, what you're going to see is how, and this started with finance committees three boards ago, the focus was on really looking at how closely... can you levy to need, right? To what you really need on the budget. And that's what we're going to look at tonight. There are services that have been bundled in this district, transportation costs. Over the first year of that, we saved $1 million in this district, and subsequently another, I think it was $500,000 and $300,000. There have been cuts made in terms of, and not in the classroom, but in terms of administrative cuts. So, it's not me out of it. I was part of those boards. There were other voices that said, we can do better, and that's my point. If this is about reducing distress in terms of the budget, then let's put it back to the administrators who are living and working every single day in those buildings with those budgets to see where there could be cuts made. Even at a really tough time in the district in 2009 when other districts were showing red in their budget, this district did not. So there is the capability to do that. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know how much more we can cut with how we're operating our buildings. I mean, the salaries is a big part of our budget, so I think it falls on us to try to make some decisions for that. But, I mean, I don't understand why don't we take it back to the regular meeting, make it an action item, just decide, are we going
to... What do you want to vote on?
We should pay TRS for administrators, yes or no. If it's a majority say no, then it comes back to finance to come up with a plan. If the majority say yes, then you're done.
So it's either all or none.
No, I mean, I think...
That's what you said. You're back to where you go
because
through and ask for so much and then you can't ever...
Well, I think you need to answer.
That's fine. If that's what you want, just say... The vote is either all or nothing for every single
I don't think it's all or nothing. I think the question is if you feel that we should look at not paying TRS, I think the solution could vary. Maybe the solution is for existing administrators, they're grandfathered in and you still pay it. I'm not saying that should be. I don't know what the solution should be, but I think you first have to answer the question, should we be paying it yes or no? Then you could come up with a solution. Maybe there's a... I don't know. Maybe everyone disagrees with me, but I guess that's how I look at it.
I understand what you're saying.
Yes or no. If the majority is saying yes, we should pay it, then
we
have to bring it back to the board.
As long as we're discussing that, I mean, should we discuss other items on the compensation, that little perks, if you want to call them perks? I just ask the question, why stop at TRS? Because it's a philosophical... I don't get the philosophical...
It starts to make some impactful purpose to that. If you want to take away the cell phone, when you're talking about dropping the bucket, I mean that's really not where you want to start. So then
if you're doing TRS, you really want to be at the all because you don't want to be on just a drop in the bucket.
I'd rather not be going into our classrooms and trying to reduce. I mean, to me, you know, we need to always be looking at that. But you know, I come back to if this is eliminated over a 3 to 5 year period, you know, Joe, you said it yourself that you know you want to make sure you know that you're compensating people well so they don't leave. We don't want to overpay. Well, we don't have very many people leaving on their own accord here. So if we did, and they were leaving, and we start to say, why are they leaving for other districts, then you have to start to look, is this an issue? But we don't have people leaving here that are administrators. So, you know, apparently we're compensating okay, and then the question comes in, are we overcompensating? And when I started to compare some of that, we are paying our administrators extremely well in this school district. So,
it's $725.
Yeah.
I have no idea what any of you want. I know individually what you want, but I don't know what to bring forward for the next meeting.
That's finance committee needs to do that, right?
I think at this point, I just need some direction as to.
I mean, Joe's the chair, yeah, but I'd probably take Stephanie's suggestion.
So,
I think it's ready to
be an action item if it's on every item, or just I asked if every item, but you're going back to
just
self CPR. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, do you have consensus that you want this brought forward as a yes, no, TRS, no TRS? Is that what I'm hearing?
And that doesn't mean how we're going to handle it. That's just, that's just my opinion. I mean, that then there, if a majority voted yes, then you have to figure out how you implement that. But
I need some help.
Yes to no, zero or no, or some modification. I mean, to me, if you're going in for zero.
I think what Stephanie is saying is that the bottom line question, does this board agree that it should continue to pay TRS for administrators or not, needs to be answered.
Yes.
And once that's answered, then there's direction.
Yes.
So that needs to be answered so that Paul and Lori know how to.
Yeah, and the board needs to.
So if we say yes, then they can go in and offer, you know, they can do it at 5%, they can do it at 9.4%. If we say no, then it has to be zero. Okay, sounds good to me.
Consensus. I'm just looking for.
As long as we understand the parameters of the vote,
December 14th meeting.
Just very similar to how Erica phrased that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're gonna switch in recording secretaries back there, so hopefully we got that one. All right. Mm-hmm. So with that, we will conclude the finance committee, and we'll start with the next meeting.